Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and tour panel discussion for this Monday morning. Very nice to have you with us. Hope you had, it's Tuesday morning. It's a holiday.
Yeah,
yesterday
Tuesday.
Was Monday. Today is Tuesday.
Yeah.
Got to check the days. It's the 5th of September, and very nice to have you with us. Hopefully you had a lovely holiday weekend. If you had one of those, let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get right in there and talk to our group about what's happening in the world, and we'll welcome your letters as well. panel@wamc.org Joining us this morning, we have the Albany County District Attorney, David Soares, is with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us, as he does each and every Tuesday. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you, as
Thank you.
Always. WAMC's Alan Chartok, fresh from a great event, I assume, at the Arlo's Church.
That's right, and it was sold out. It was great. The band was in fine metal,
heavy metal?
No, it's fine metal, and it was really
different than fine fiddle.
And it was really a very exciting time. I love the Guthrie Center, by the way. You know that church, which was in the movie, and which Arlo bought later on, and it's really turned out to be a great traditional place in Great Barrington. And last night, unfortunately, we had dinner with our friends, the Fleurs, don't you know, and they had some people there, and they were very interesting. They were all very interesting, and I didn't go to bed till 11 o'clock. Now I get up at 2 o'clock, so that's 3 hours. So if you guys hear anything, you know,
if the strange, conversation wanders,
that'll be that, like it is right now.
And with that, we go to our topics for today. And, of course, first and foremost, we look at North Korea. The U.S. urging fuel cutoff for North Korea, saying it's begging for war. That is the line that came out yesterday from Nikki Haley, begging for war. The Trump administration warning that North Korea is begging for war is pressing China and other members of the United Nations Security Council to cut off all oil and other fuels to the country. The effort, which senior administration officials described as a last best chance to resolve the standoff with the North using sanctions rather than military means, came as South Korea officials said Monday that they had seen evidence that North Korea may be preparing for another test, likely of an intercontinental ballistic missile. That test, which would be the nation's third in a month, and we'll talk about the huge one that occurred over the weekend, that test, which would be the nation's third in a month, could be timed to mark the anniversary of the founding of North Korea. And it's unclear where the test might be aimed, but Pentagon officials said that they were examining options in case it was meant to demonstrate that the North could put a missile with accuracy off the coast of Guam, of course, an American territory.
And Joe, of course, his Kim's incredible rhetoric, which is we could flatten the United States. That's pretty strong. That's pretty strong stuff. And nobody can quite figure out what's on this guy's mind. So he was warned by Obama that this was going to be his greatest problem, and it is his greatest problem. And I think, you know, he's just scared to death about what's happening to him. You know, I've been thinking a little bit about what do you do with the Chinese standoff? See, the Chinese don't want America to come up to their line. That's the big problem right now. So it seems to me, instead of trying to deal with Kim, you deal with the Chinese and you say, okay, we can work something out about how, if you help us get this thing out of the way, whatever happens in Korea, you're not going to have South Korea on the Chinese border. I'll bet that's doable.
Well, you know what's interesting watching this take place is, you know, over the last 15, 20 years, I think we've all grown accustomed to hearing, you know, the volatile words coming out of leadership in North Korea. I think it's just surprising right now to see the violent rhetoric being returned. And it seems like there is a volley between, you know, our leadership and North Korea's leadership. China, which, as you said, plays an incredibly important role here. I don't think we're going to be seeing them do much of anything until the president is reconfirmed by the National Communist Congress, which is meeting, I believe, sometime in the middle of October. And usually, you know, as I was reading, leadership there wants nothing complicated happening. In fact, they just want to ride into the months of October, be reappointed, and then I believe sometime after the end of October we'll start to see China take some kind of action.
I get it. It's interesting because then there's the Russians in all of this. Now, we know of Trump's alleged relationship with the Russians. The Russians are now coming back and saying this is all a bunch of nonsense. We shouldn't be doing trade restrictions on North Korea. It doesn't work. And here's Trump recommending trade restrictions on North Korea. So, Mike, you look concerned here. What do you think?
I was going to ask the rhetorical question. Is it really the right approach to put more pain on a country where there's not enough food right now to feed the population? I mean, I think it just emboldens the leadership and emboldens the people who are only getting that one-way message from their leadership that the United States has animosity and hostility towards them. And, you know, I think it has to tone down. I mean, I think that's the message that Russia and China and other Western countries are sending to the White House, that we have to tone down our rhetoric. We shouldn't be making assertions at the United Nations that North Korea is begging for war. Now, they're begging for attention, don't you think?
Mike, with all due respect to you and the mighty institution which you represent here.
My opinions on North Korea are that of my own.
No, of course. But I'm it isn't really a simple issue.
No,
because when we tamper down our rhetoric or when we make an opening for them, they set off an H-bomb. and they send a missile over Japan, which scares the hell out of the Japanese.
Well, in addition to the Capital District listening to Mr. Spain, I think the leadership in South Korea is also listening to Mr. Spain.
Well, they might agree with what I said, but I don't know they've heard what I said.
Everyone listens to Mr. Spain.
What's interesting is that they're calling for calm, and they're calling for the toning down of the violent rhetoric. And as that was being said this weekend, we had the President of the United States now threatening South Korea, which was very strange.
In line of, I'm sorry, I know I interrupt you far too much. I want to send that message to your home. But I can say that South Korea is just like McConnell. You know, this guy attacks his alleged friends.
In addition to attacking South Korea this weekend, he also threatened trade sanctions, you know, with South Korea, which is just mind-boggling because you don't know if he's thinking about a peace or he's thinking about trade when he's tweeting. And of course, it's very difficult to articulate, you know, a point with a Twitter account.
But he's not much of a multitasker, if you know what I mean.
He's not much of a multitasker, but what I found very confusing is, I mean, if the North Koreans, if you can articulate what the North Koreans really want, the North Koreans want the United States out of South Korea. And so what I don't understand is how the North Koreans engage in this provocation and the response from the United States is a response that calls for the threatening of sanctions to South Korea, their military partners. It's just mind-boggling. I don't know what to make of that.
That would be something that North Korea would probably be happy about. I mean, to see tension between the United States president and South Korea is a successful, you know, result of what North Korea is doing. I mean, I certainly am frightened to death about a crazy guy in North Korea doing nuclear testing and flying bombs over Japan, et cetera, et cetera. That's terrifying, and I think it's something we all need to be concerned about. But he's getting the attention that he wants. He's getting the rhetoric going around the globe where the United States is actually being criticized. He's causing tension between the United States and one of its longtime allies, South Korea. He's causing tension between the United States and China. He's succeeding in what he's doing, and that's why the United States should be toning it down.
He's succeeding, you mean
Kim. Kim is succeeding in what he's doing. I mean, this is difficult to watch.
Yeah.
It's painful.
So who's got a tougher job this week? The White House chief of staff or Nikki Haley? Who's got the most difficult job?
Good question.
I think a tie.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a tie, I think.
In both cases, they have to deal with interpreting the direction that they're getting from the White House, from the President of the United States, President Trump, and present it in a way that has maybe not as much... maybe not as harsh. I don't know. They're trying to interpret him.
In terms of that question, a good question. People who listen to this program and many of them just don't like anything about Trump or any of the people he has to do with. But if you were to rate, 1 to 5, 1 to 10, the job that any of his people were doing and ask, people would say Kelly's maybe a 7. Nikki Haley's maybe a 7. They would give Trump a 1 or a -1. I'm thinking. So he actually has two people in place who have an attractiveness to many of the people, maybe not everybody listening to the show, but the middle class.
I think even if you're not a supporter of this administration, you have to...
Yeah.
You have to support someone like Nikki Haley, whose task is to sit at the United Nations and work towards leveraging relationships to our cause. And she's got to be, in order for us to be successful as a nation in any endeavor that we're seeking, she has to be successful. But I wonder what it's like to be Nikki Haley and... To watch the President of the United States pull out of all of these global pacts, whether we're talking about trade agreements or environmental pacts, where you need your nations, where you need the assistance of all of these superpowers. I wonder what it's like to be her, watching America recede from its previous position and then being tasked with having to bring these nations together and leveraging them towards our cause.
It's a great question. Put another way, what's it like? What does Nikki Haley really say when she goes home?
Oh, I'd like to be the fly on the wall. It's a tough job.
This idea of, I just want to get to the timing of these. And we're talking about China, and as I mentioned, of course, that of course, China is such a part of this, and what we're also looking at is these moments where the president of China is set to address this meeting of economies and summit leaders, and then you have the test, and then the fact that this seems to be also closely and carefully choreographed. That what position does that put China in, and how they respond, not only, of course, to North Korea, but in how they respond to us, and is it fair to say provoking by the administration?
Well, Joe, I need you to go back and parse that question a little bit or clarify it for me. There are one of two assumptions: either China is in on it, or China isn't in on it. Right? I mean, that's one of the things we have to worry about here. If China is helping to, as you put it, choreograph this, it has a whole different meaning than if...
I know.
But I'm just raising this with you. If Xi is sitting up there and furious that this whole thing is being ruined by North Korea, that's a whole different story than if, for some reason... He thinks that in order to advance the Chinese cause, to keep South Korea from their borders, this has to be done.
From the New York Times, Mr. Kim has timed his nuclear tests and missile launches with exquisite precision, apparently trying to create maximum embarrassment for China. And on Sunday, a gathering in Southeast China of leaders from Russia, Brazil, India, and South Africa, members of the so-called BRICS group, was immediately overshadowed by news of the test, which shook dwellings in China and revived fears of nuclear contamination in the country's northeast region.
I think China's got a real problem in the north, because every time we see North Korea engage in these provocations, it's going to force the United States to work more aggressively with South Korea to put some of its missile defense systems in South Korea towards the protection of South Korea, something that the Chinese absolutely do not want. And so at some point, you know, the Chinese are going to have to step in here. And as a matter of their own, you know, philosophy and what appears to be a conquest of the looking to establish a firmer grip on the southeast and the islands along the Pacific in their military endeavors there, they're going to have to do something about North Korea. I think in the past, when they've been asked to do it, they've never really engaged in or supported our efforts at sanctions, because it didn't serve their interest. I think right now the fact that the United States has taken a much more aggressive steps in delivering some of those military and missile defense systems to South Korea, we may see them step up a little more.
You know what's interesting? You guys, of course, have all looked at the map of North Korea many times, and where they tested that H-bomb, that's further towards China than it is towards South Korea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll talk about this. We have some letters on this, plus we'll move on to other topics as well. A lot happening. 3-day weekend, so a lot has happened over the last 3 days. We will talk about all of that when we return. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and we also are very, very pleased to have the district attorney of Albany County, David Soares, with us this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we have some letters.
Okay, so Ozone Pete writes to us and says, dear panelists, you've got to be kidding about supporting, in quotes, Nikki Haley and her attempts to bully, bluff, and blackmail the rest of the world. Put somebody with a modicum of smarts and knowledge and geopolitics and history in the position of UN ambassador, and maybe I'd support them. But certainly not this current warmongering idiot. Have a thoughtful day. Pete from Dolan. Nobody said we should support her. I simply said, in terms of his cast of characters, of people who do better for him than he does, she was one of them, and I'm going to stick with that. So it's always best not to...
Those are the ones.
Yeah, it's always best not to put words in your mouth, in somebody else's mouth. Okay, so now let's go here. Let's go to Jan from Ankrum. What causes me additional concern, no matter that utter fright, is not knowing what else NK, North Korea, don't do that, is capable of sending our way. In other words, germ and chemical warfare. And Nikki says, we did that one. I'm sorry, Joe, you're quite right. Kelly Haley and Trump says, Joel, I'm a regular listener to this station. I do not take comfort from Kelly and Haley. They do not have their fingers on the nuclear button. Trump does. Frederick says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning. The leader of North Korea is not crazy. He is a realistic and a student of history. He knows that the United States does not attack countries that have atomic or nuclear weapons, and so other call weapons of mass destruction and the means to deliver them. Case in point, Bush and company knew that Iraq did not have these kinds of weapons, and therefore they felt safe in invading that nation. If you're looking for irrationality on the part of the nation's leader, look no further than Trump. Thomas says, Texans lead the states' rights smaller federal government movement. With that in mind, I believe Texas should begin collecting an income tax on its citizens to rebuild Houston. Does anyone else remember the Freeze a Yankee slogan that emanated from Texas during the 1970s oil crisis? And that's from Tom. By the way, anybody has anything to say about this, please just jump in. Okay.
Well, I was going to say that I think people like Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson have surprised me. They've been remarkably, I think, diplomatic, faced with having to represent the current administration against, you know, the tide that's coming from the rest of the world. I'm surprised and I'm impressed by her. I was impressed when she was the governor of South Carolina, when she ordered the Confederate flag to be taken down. And I think she's an up-and-comer, and we should keep an eye on her.
I agree with you. Michael says, sanctions. Is he threatening sanctions against South Korea because he thinks they're appeasing North Korea? That's from Michael.
That's exactly what he did this week. He threatened sanctions against South Korea, claiming, you know, the trade deficit with South Korea. And he was none too happy with the president of South Korea suggesting once again that they should engage North Korea in talks.
Yep. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Knowing that two unstable, unpredictable child leaders have red buttons at hand, red buttons was a comedian, that's what I first said, but no, red buttons is a nuclear, I am reminded of Bob Dylan's Eve of Destruction. Remember the lyrics? And Thomas.
Was that a Bob Dylan song, Joe? Wasn't that Barry McGuire, Eve of Destruction?
I think you're right.
Yes. Okay.
But I don't know for sure.
But I digress.
I can look.
And don't look at me. Comment, there are no winners in a nuclear war. If there ever was a time for wise leadership, the willingness and ability to directly engage a discussion, it is now, from Tom in Catskill. And Steve says, good morning. Nikki Haley accepted a job offered by a sociopath, question mark?
Well, you know, people may have their opinions about the president. And believe you me, I have my own. But I don't think that we should be so critical of those who take on a position in service to our country. And I'm not suggesting to you that I agree with Rex Tillerson or Nikki Haley. I believe you me, we are ideologically in two different worlds. But there are people who have, you know, engaged in the service of our country, and they're trying to do the best that they can with a very, very difficult president. This is remarkable. We've never had anyone who engaged in foreign policy over a Twitter account, you know, on a Monday night. Or a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. It's quite dangerous. Could you look back in history and think of any president where the staff has had to control the president the way this staff has?
I think in the final days, as it's called, of the Nixon administration, an effort to kind of keep it from going off. But, you know, it seems like that's the way it is all the time in the White House now.
We're 8 months in.
Yeah, we're 8 months in. And the New York Times had a story, I think, at the end of last week about how Trump is having, shouting matches with Kelly, his chief of staff. There's some question about how long that relationship is going to last. Kelly, of course, has kept him reined in and managed his calendar so that he doesn't have people just wandering in. And Trump is said to be one who sort of adopts the opinion of the last voice he heard and that kind of thing. And his chief of staff, Kelly, has been doing a lot to try to add I guess, order to the chaos, and it hasn't been so widely received by the president. And this makes you wonder what's going to happen if Kelly does leave. What's going to happen when the next chief of staff comes in? Is it just going to become more chaotic if it's hard to imagine?
You know, Mike, that's interesting. It is interesting. I was just sort of thinking of the DACA business and whether or not, at what point does the chief of staff who's been brought in to maintain order goes over into the policy side and says, well, part of order is being intelligent about what you're doing. So is it only order that they expect of Kelly, or is it that he becomes an advisor on what's wise on policy?
Well, this was part of the confusion, I think, for those of us who witnessed Kelly being promoted to that position with little to no legislative experience. You want your chief of staff to be a person who has a great understanding of what happens in the Senate and in the House, and is in regular communication with other elected officials. And in this instance, you know, you're starting from ground zero. This is a man who I don't believe possesses those skills. And while I'm very confident in his ability to bring about discipline in the structure of the White House staffing, I don't think that a 70-year-old man with a Twitter account is ever going to be receptive to any discipline.
All right.
That's a great phrase.
I think he's 72, though, now, isn't he?
Yeah, that's true. over 70. Over 70.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Military advancement to the higher echelons comes with war experience. Peacetime is not conducive to advancement. And now that we have such an overwhelming military presence in the White House, led by a bully and a liar, war with North Korea has little to do with a dictator in North Korea. Dan says, North Korea is just ticking. Let's set it off. Do you really think he's going to go away? Here's something scary. Tactical nuclear weapons. Dan.
I don't know if it's because we have a culture where we've been raised on John Wayne movies and Clint Eastwood and we seem to love our war epics. But I think that when we're thinking about North Korea, it's important that we consider the fact that it's the South Koreans that I'm most worried about.
Sure.
And if something were to touch off, you know, along that peninsula, you would have millions of people who would be dead in minutes. And so we shouldn't be so quick to have these discussions about war as if we're watching it on television. These are real people with real consequences.
And I would add to that, we are technically still at war with North Korea.
Technically, yes.
And we fought quite a war with the North Koreans. So we have to remember that they're not going to be the Iraqi army. This will be hell if this actually happens. Joe, are we going to a break or shall
we? No, two more letters.
Okay. Why isn't the press questioning Trump about his use of illegal immigrants to build Trump Tower? Well, we all know it's happened, and we've all read about it at some place or another, so it isn't as if it's invisible, but that's right. It's a very good question. And Molly says, really dark scenario. I have a horrible, sinking sensation that the current occupant of the White House is also, quote, begging for war. It would, after all, raise his ratings. Also, give him an excuse for calling off the 2018 election, as we would be in a crisis. And that's from Molly. One more, Joe, or not?
Yep.
Okay. Ricky says, hi, panel. What is your opinion of the eviction of the Palestinian family by Israelis in Jerusalem? Well, I've never been a fan of evicting people who live in homes to build more homes. I think, frankly, I'm Jewish. I'm in the middle class Jewish community. And I don't think people that I know, like me, who are pro-Israel, are happy about this kind of thing.
Let's take a break there. We'll pause, and when we come back, we'll talk about DACA in much more detail. We have a lot to talk about in that subject, even though we've been around the fringes there for a little bit. We'll be right back and consider that and much more. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let me let's go to the story, as I promised, that we will talk about DACA. President Trump is expected to phase out the DACA program, although decision is not finalized. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that is what DACA stands for, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. President Trump is expected to phase out the Obama-era program that grants work permits to about 800,000 undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children, but delay its end for 6 months to give Congress time to pass legislation to replace it, according to multiple people briefed on the president's decisions. There was a Trump tweet this morning that said, Congress, game on, your turn, go ahead, go do something with it.
So I can blame you.
Very much punting it to Congress and giving them a six-month deadline. The plan remains fluid and could change, however. An administration official stressed Sunday evening that the president has not finalized his decision. The White House has scheduled an announcement for Tuesday. Trump has been wrestling over the future. That's today, by the way. Trump has been wrestling over the future of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program since the start of his presidency, and he has been known to change his mind about difficult policy issues until the moment he makes public a decision. But he is tweeting about the decision as if it's a decision. So we'll assume that it's a decision.
So, Joe, it seems to me it is what all of our mothers used to say, as if they were the only ones who ever said it, which is he wants his cake and eat it.
I've scratched my head thinking about this, wondering what he could possibly be thinking by setting up a returning Congress with this issue. I mean, they've got debt ceiling, yeah, you know, crisis. Sure. They've got funding for relief for the floods, and here they are on the eve of returning back to session, and the president of the United States is teeing up this very controversial issue for them. Oh, and by the way, your midterms are looming.
Right. 2013 was when they had the Gang of Eight, so to speak, a bipartisan group of senators. Chuck Schumer was on that, and Marco Rubio was on that. And they had worked out a very reasonable plan to deal with the immigration crisis. And, of course, that was the thing that emboldened the Tea Party, you know, and Mark Meadows, the senator from North Carolina, leading the way. And where I think the White House is actually has a strategy here. They're trying to link the debt ceiling issue, you know, raising the debt ceiling, which we have to do in order to continue to operate in the United States, with this, with aid to go to Texas. And the Tea Party people don't want that. They really want to stop the debt ceiling raise. And, he's making it very difficult for the Congress, but the outcome you were speculating before, David, maybe you'd like to share that, might actually force Congress to put aside some of their own differences.
And I just want to add to that before we go to the always wise, David, and I mean that, the idea that really this is now down to the nubs, which is, are the Democrats and the Republicans going to allow themselves to have a joint approach to doing anything? Now, clearly, there are enough Republicans and all the Democrats who would say the DACA thing, we have to do this. But of course, if they don't get a vote, if Ryan exercises authority not to let that happen, then it won't happen. And so I think fundamental to what you've just said is this idea that maybe we could have a little bipartisanship here, although I doubt it's going to happen.
Well, I thought it was very telling that the person in the form of Paul Ryan, who has not said a word as racist, you know, pretty much attacked and killed a young woman in Charlottesville. He's remained silent on so many important issues this weekend, mentioned and provided his opinion that the president shouldn't touch DACA. DACA shouldn't be something that should be on the table for the moment. So I think for him coming out and attaching his name to that and making that statement, I think he just sees the storm on the horizon. This issue has the potential to fracture his house even more than it already is.
Yeah, but you see, he's still an autocrat. He's still an oligarch. He still is the only vote that counts in the House of Representatives. No other thing counts. It's he, because that's the way the House of Representatives, you know, is structured. So I just think he's the deer caught in the headlights. I don't think he knows which way to go. I think he still entertains, maybe fallaciously or not, the idea that he could be the president of the United States. And he took the speakership, even though he didn't want it, because he knew it was going to interfere with his eventual plan to be president.
I think that's very true.
So Attorney General Jeff Sessions, senior policy advisor Stephen Miller, and recently departed chief White House strategist Steve Bannon have advocated a hardline immigration stance, including ending DACA. It was a campaign issue for the president. He vowed to end it immediately, but then he started to voice sympathy for the program's beneficiaries and said that they would think about it. And we love dreamers, he said on Friday. We think the dreamers are terrific as long as they go.
Yeah. Well, no. It's all in the base. It's all in the base. I mean, you know, that's what this is all about. He can't get away from that 33% or whatever it is. He just can't
do it. But with dreamers, though, I think there might be people in the base who aren't aware that they might be dreamers. You know, they came here as infants or very young children. They went to school. They went to college. They have jobs. And suddenly they realize, oops, that's me.
I want to get back to the point that David made, though, because you have this returning Congress. You got enough problems, and on top of this, the Congress has already said we'd like to leave it in place, and then you turn this on them. On top of it, I don't know how you gain anything in that if you're the administration.
Well, I want to answer that if I can for a second.
Sure.
I really think...
Yeah, right.
Pardon me for interrupting.
I really think that it's a matter of just taking no responsibility. He just doesn't want... He doesn't want it to be on his head. He's caught between what he intuitively, what Ivanka, what the other guys are saying in his White House, and he says, okay, we'll push it off the Congress and we'll set them up to take the blame.
Yeah, you know, it's the most short-sighted thing I think he's managed to do, talking about the president.
That's quite a statement.
Which is quite a statement, because you're not going to succeed without Congress. You're not going to succeed without putting points on the board. So why would you set up your Congress to take on an issue that they do not want on their plate? But I think as we started talking a little bit earlier this morning, what we could see, and I'm basing my opinion here just on John McCain and what I consider to be a declaration of war in his editorial over the weekend. It's John McCain's effort to bring Congress together and create bipartisanship and try to pass some legislation in spite of this president.
David, would you remind everybody what the McCain piece was about, regular orders and things like that?
McCain was talking about the fact that you have a president who is inexperienced, and therefore it's incumbent upon Congress to come together to, and it's the duty of Congress to come together to pass legislation for the people. And I think I think if you could make a statement, that's one of those statements that is completely void of any partisanship. I think everyone believes that.
I agree with you. And it can't, I'm going to get into trouble for this, but it can't hurt that as you get closer, as all of us get closer to meeting our maker, sooner or later, we begin to think of the right thing versus the political thing. And I think McCain is really one utterance after another has been something that all of us can admire.
Right. He appeared this weekend in Rome at an international conference where he underscored that the United States remains committed to world peace and cooperation. And, I mean, it was a pretty, I think, straightforward repudiation of the message that's coming out of the White House.
But there was another part of the McCain piece which is important, and that is that we can't have these votes in Congress without any committee work first, without any
process.
Orders.
Process. Yeah, going back to process.
Well,
yeah.
That's pretty important. Now, there were those people who will argue the Democrats didn't like it much either, as well as the Republicans. But it's a very good point, because those of us who've worked in Congress and worked around it see that there is some real benefit from having committee meetings in which even the minority speaking up or questioning a witness at a hearing counts for a great deal in terms of what the product is.
Let's hold there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Ray Graff is in the newsroom and is ready to, or is in a studio anyway, ready to give us the news. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, and Albany County District Attorney David Soares. And we are thrilled to have you with us this morning. All you have to do is write to us. To do that, panel at WAMC.org. Please use that address. If you use another address, you won't be hearing your letter on the radio, and we won't get it. So, panel at W... Oh, I just noticed that. You have two. Well, of course you do. You're like... You, of course, you have two cell phones. How do you not? Is one like one is one official city business and city? Gotcha.
Interesting.
That's very cool. That makes you like super important. That is that's really awesome. Good morning. Okay, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Go to a couple of letters and then we'll move on to some other topics because I want to get to the issue of Congress coming back.
Right.
In total, as in addition to all the other, in addition to DACA, they have other things on their plate. So we'll get to that in a moment.
Well, Carol says, "Hi, panel. In re to Mr. Soares, parentheses, who I like and respect, by the way, opinion that we should not criticize those who take on the mantle of someone who has sought a position of serving the citizenry. My, capital my, opinion, however, is that Trump sought the office for the purpose of serving himself, in capital letters. His service to the people is just an inconvenient accident to him. Thank you. And the most important thing she says is love the program." Steve says, "Good AM. McCain selected Sarah Palin as VP, which ushered in reality TV leadership. Not someone to celebrate." Well, yeah, if you took everything that everybody does, you wouldn't celebrate anybody. But the fact that this guy who has made some mistakes in his life is doing what I consider to be very important work right now, you got to respect it. Anyway, Bob says, "Cruel punishment. Sending DACA-eligible immigrants back to Mexico is cruel punishment and therefore not constitutional." Okay. All right. Our friend, and frankly, a distant relative of mine, Kevin says, "Good morning. The problem isn't with the 45, it's with those who voted him into power when it comes to issues such as DACA." And that's from Kevin. And Russell says, "Unless Trump says I'll be quiet and listen to your judgment to anybody in capital as anybody, just forget it." And Bob says, "Trump's birthday is just a couple of weeks before mine. I'm pretty sure he's 71.
All right. Okay. I think we said 70 and 72.
I think we said 72.
Yeah. To average it out, it's correct.
Yeah, we're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, we got.
I just want to say that I certainly was not advocating for citizens of this country to not be critical of their elected officials. I just want to make that point. We choose to run for office and we hold office for the people, and we are certainly worthy of criticism. What I meant to say about Nikki Haley and some of the more serious people in the Trump administration is that they're good public servants. You may not agree with them. They're good public servants. They're trying to do their best with this particular president as the boss. And I think that I think she probably gets ready to go to work. And as she's driving to work, she may have her agenda for the day planned, but I think as she gets to work and sits down at her desk, she's undermined by a tweet that comes out between the drive from her home to her office.
Now, Mr. District Attorney, you have a fairly substantial staff, not huge, but you have staff. If they disagree with you, How important is that to you that they do that?
I've made it my practice in my organization not to hold on to yes people. Yes people, they're great people, but they don't help further your organization, and they're not keeping you honest.
So, Mike, is that how it works at the Times Union also?
There's very few yes people in my experience at the Times Union. We get a lot of contradiction among the staff, and I think that's what makes it interesting.
So I want to go to the story about, because we've been talking about DACA, we've been talking about the Congress, and as I said, this is something that David brought up earlier as to the overall discussion of Congress coming back and what is on their plate. And, well, the answer to that is there's a lot on their plate. They'll be back tomorrow. They return. And so we've been hinting around it, talking about bipartisanship. And they've had a month-long summer recess and 8 months of legislative dysfunction and gridlock. Hurricane Harvey appears to have brought Republicans and Democrats together around the most basic of congressional duties, aiding Americans whose lives and homes have been wrecked by a natural disaster and keeping the government open. With parts of Texas and Louisiana underwater, shelters overflowing, and the search for survivors still underway, the two parties appear inclined to cooperate with each other on at least the first steps toward an emergency response that could eventually top $100 billion. The White House forwarded an initial $7.8 billion request Friday night. President Trump's threat to shut down the government over funding for a border wall, which dominated the discussion in Washington before the storm, is now off the table, said Representative Charlie Dent, Republican of Pennsylvania. The debate over the wall and how to pay for it will almost certainly be delayed as Congress wrestles instead with contentious must-pass measures to fund the federal government and raise the statutory borrowing limit. We have been, not to be cynical in this case, but we have heard the possibility of bipartisanship over the last several months, and well, that hasn't worked.
Well, I think if you look back over the last 7 months, Congress was really set up for failure here, right? How are you going to start this session by talking about the Affordable Care Act, an issue that has been one of the most divisive issues the previous last 8 years? How are you going to come back and then, you know, right out of the gate, throw upon, the Tea Party, which is, you know, red meat issues. I think the danger here for Donald Trump is that now we're starting to see, because of the storm, because of the debt ceiling, we're starting to see some issues that you can, you know, get some bipartisanship, you know, cooperation here. In fact, there are some subcommittees that have already been started, with various leaders taking on, you know, certain issues, among them being some fixes for the Affordable Care Act. So I don't think Congress started off, you know, very well in 2017, but certainly right now as they're coming back, we see some opportunities for them to get some work done. And if they do so in a bipartisan way, that could spell the beginning of the end for Mr. Trump's meddling now, with the two leaders.
Now, I'm going to hear from the animal rights people here, and I apologize in advance. But one of the standard jokes that we've all heard is, how do you get a mule's attention? And, you know, there's a smack him in the head with a 2x4. And I think to some degree, our politicians have been smacked in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think they heard when they were on their month-long recess from the constituents? I mean, what message did they get? You know, that may be the smack in the head that they needed. People are pretty unhappy with Congress. As much as the polls show Trump has something in the low 30s supporting him, I think Congress is like half that.
And Ryan, I mean, we were talking about what Ryan, you know, his are abysmal.
Approval ratings are very low.
16%
right now.
Or something like that. Yeah. That's just.
Well, David brings up a very interesting point, I think, because I was astounded when I started reading that Trump wants them to go back to the Affordable Care Act. It's astounding.
Goodness. My goodness. I think they should stop taking his calls.
Well, that isn't good either, is it? I mean,
sounds like a Saturday night live routine. Who's on the line? Oh, I recognize that number. Don't pick it up.
I must say, you know, it was years ago, and I worked in a congressional office, got close to the congressman, and he, and LBJ was calling him. He wasn't taking LBJ's calls. He didn't want to talk to him because he was trying to convince him to do something he didn't want to do.
Yeah. And he could be very persuasive.
He sure could.
You know, it's one thing if you had a president that had called for Congress to take on certain issues and then stepped back or was working with Congress to get things done. But you have a person who will undermine the very work of the people who he, you know, is asking to achieve something by, you know, calling legislation heartless, you know.
And the same legislation you praised a couple of weeks earlier, right?
Exactly. So he certainly doesn't – he's not helping. And I think if Congress returns to session, and I think that if Congress is listening to the words of John McCain and they begin to devote themselves more to process, you could start to see our Congress functioning again.
And the two guys you want to look at are obviously the leaders of both houses.
Both of whom have been offended very recently by the President of the United States.
And then they have to decide whether they're going to take the offense personally or whether they're going to have to protect their members who were potentially at risk from a primary and go in that direction. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Let's go to letters, and then we'll finish up with our final story today.
Okay. Mark says it's Congress's responsibility. Trump is allowed to feed this to his base because Congress is afraid of embarrassing the of addressing the immigration issue. If they did their job, he would not be allowed to do this as it was an executive order by Obama to begin with to try to put in a humane patch on a dysfunctional immigration policy. That's from Mark. Richard says, panel, the only group that seems to benefit from ending DACA are the white nationalists. No other group, be it the business community, the religious community, et cetera, benefits from such a heartless, cold, and cruel policy decision. And that's from Richard. And Greg says, dear panel, if Congress sends the president a bipartisan bill that his base views as amnesty, could he veto? Congress is still less popular than Trump. If he won't stop fighting, he might as well fight a lightweight like Congress. And that's from Greg. You know, when you think about this, the one way that that Trump has to sign bills is if they're veto-proof. And it's happened once already that we've just seen. So I'm thinking
you're
that's
talking about
the
sanctions against the Russia, Soviet Union. Oops.
by the way, Mike, we all do that. And we do it all the time.
Sorry.
Let's go to the final story today, and that is about Irma. We've obviously are still dealing with Harvey recovery in Texas and Louisiana, working very hard in that storm. And now we heard this morning that Hurricane Irma has now been upgraded to a Category 5.
And is headed towards Florida.
Yeah, so for the first time Hurricane Harvey made landfall, the Coast Guard did not have to carry out rescue missions in storm-ravaged southeast Texas on Sunday. Instead, the service began moving a number of helicopters out of Texas and into Puerto Rico, Florida, and Georgia in anticipation of another landfall threat brewing for the U.S. coast. Hurricane Irma is, again, Category 5, churning in the Atlantic. Meteorologists and forecasters say it's still too early to determine exactly where and when Irma will hit, but model forecasts indicate it is increasingly likely to affect the United States. The National Hurricane Center warned in an update this morning at 4 a.m., that Irma, depending on its path, could impact the British and U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, Cuba, and the Leeward Islands. A significant percentage of model forecasts have Irma striking the U.S. East Coast as early as Saturday or Sunday, and tropical storm winds arriving in Florida as soon as Friday.
So let's assume the worst, which is always my way of doing things because they almost always come true. So it hits Florida. It dumps tons of rain on Florida. Massive destruction. From a political point of view, Florida is a must-win state, you know, for the Republicans. Texas, of course, was in their basket already, but Florida could go either way. And so now let's just say you have to double. He's coming up with $8 billion for Texas. Let's assume you have to do at least that much for Florida. And now the Congress is still in session and still struggling with all this stuff.
Well, I think because Florida is a toss-up state now,
sure,
you're going to see both parties really aim for for Florida.
Yeah, but I mean, both parties were nobody was in disagreement about coming to the aid of Texas and Louisiana, and that'll continue. I mean, these are the things that ordinarily brings Congress together. I mean, it didn't back when Hurricane Sandy was aid was on the table.
Because of the Texans.
Yeah, because of the Texans and the Tea Party. But by and large, these kinds of things bring us together. One of the things about a Category 5 hurricane is it's 175 mile-an-hour winds. And then we know now that the warming waters in the Gulf and in the Atlantic are causing heavier rain than normal, which you cannot deny are the results of, it doesn't matter what I say, the experts say is the result of the warming climate.
Well, I just want to say that these storms generally
95%
emanate.
95% of the experts, Mike. Yes.
These storms generally emanate from the Cape Verdean Islands, where I'm from, so I want that disclaimer there. We didn't really start this. But, you know, the thing about Florida, if you remember St. Augustine last year in the month of October, St. Augustine was underwater.
Yeah.
The one thing you can say about Florida is their preparedness. Not that we want to see the kind of destruction and that these storms generally present, but the one thing that you can say about the infrastructure and the first responder from Florida is that they know how to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Georgia, too. I mean, that part of the East Coast.
Georgia, not so much. I mean, given the fact that they shut down the state with 2 inches of snow a few years ago.
Oh, well, that's different, David.
But hurricane.
They're good with hurricanes.
They're good with hurricanes. But unless Irma, it turns into a blizzard, I think
unfortunately, they all have a great deal of experience to build on.
Yeah. But absolutely. By the way, David, just for the record, when Washington, D.C. gets 2 inches of snow, they have a big problem.
shutting down? Yeah. Washington's all becoming too familiar with shutting itself down. You know, one of the things about that article that I really that caught my eye was the fact that we're at a point right now where we're having to move equipment from one area of our country to other areas just to prepare for storms that are coming.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Joe just read that.
And I think that this is going to become a more routine practice, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Meaning at some point you are going to have disaster preparedness for a regionalization.
I mean, we already have our military, you know, which you'd have to say, okay, this is the most trustworthy in terms of information, knowledge, and intelligence. They live and die by it. And if they're now taking climate change into consideration, right? Why are the rest of the country not? Are we still debating this issue?
An executive order of the Trump administration recently was that they cannot factor in climate change in the construction of, you know, federal projects, despite the military's own intention to do so.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody for joining us, and thanks for your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back tomorrow with another discussion. And my thanks to Alan and to Mike and to David. Thank you all very much.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'm off to interview Brian Kolb, the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, who I think is going to tell us he's going to run for governor, which proves my point, which is anybody will do anything to getting out of the Republican minority in the State Assembly.
Well, there he is. We'll be ready for the announcement. We'll be back right after this.